Bret Hart Radio is presented by Sharpshooter Funding in association with PodcastArena.com and Gao Media.
Are you a small business looking to get over, but you don't have all the funds you need? Well, there's a solution. Check out sharpshooterfunding.com. At Sharpshooter Funding, they know that they have a solution to fit your specific needs. Their team has the experience and knowledge to find you the best product for your specific situation. Whether you're a first-time customer or a repeat business partner, their team will fulfill your needs. Give them a ring at 416-238-0252. That's 416-238-0252. Or send an email to dallas@sharpshooterfunding.com.
This is Bret Hart Radio. The best there is,
the best there was,
the best there ever will be.
Bret Hart Radio. Live from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, here are your hosts. WWE Hall of Famer Bret the Hitman Hart, his sons Blade and Dallas, and WrestleZone.com's Nick Houseman.
It's Bret Hart Radio.
Bret Hart Radio. Bret Hart Radio.
Okay, welcome to another edition of the Sharpshooter Podcast on Bret Hart Radio, and this is going to be a really good show today. It's going to be the best, one of the best ones we've ever done.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Well, of course, that's WWE Hall of Famer Bret the Hitman Hart. We've got his son, Blade Hart, and I am, of course, I don't know, am I doing this for myself? I'm legendary Nick Houseman. That sounds so pretentious when I say it, though. Like, it doesn't have the same effect to it. I don't know. Well, anyway, welcome back. We have a big show here today. And, of course, as always, before we get into all the big breaking news we're going to be talking about here on the Sharpshooter Podcast, we'd like to take a moment to remind everybody today's show is brought to you by Sharpshooter Funding. Sharpshooter Funding, of course. Blade, I know you have big ties with Sharpshooter Funding. What is going on in the world of Sharpshooter Funding this week? Anything big?
We recently funded a $51,000 deal to the Golfers Academy in Toronto. So we're pretty excited about that. We just want to give a shout out to Jason and the Golfers Academy down there. Hope they enjoy the Sharpshooter Funding custom balls we sent them. And anyone interested in golf clubs, any indoor-outdoor lessons or simulator lessons, just go to the Golfers Academy in the Toronto area, and they'll sort you out.
And I am a big golf nerd. Frisbee golf or legitimate golf, I will do both. And that sounds awesome. I want to get some Sharpshooter Funding golf balls. That sounds awesome. So
we're gonna strong-arm Paul for some. I need some, too.
all right. Well, guys, of course, if you're listening to the show right now, you're listening to Bret Hart Radio, please go subscribe on iTunes. 5-star ratings, comments, always appreciated. You can, of course, find us at podcastarena.com. And if you have any business inquiries, it's info@sharpshooterfunding.com. But without further ado, let's get into it. It's time to go sharpshooting with Bret the Hitman Hart.
It's time to go sharpshooting. Sharpshooting. News and notes from professional wrestling and beyond. It's Sharpshooting with Bret Hart, presented by Sharpshooter Funding.
Nick, what do we got cooking this week?
Well, Bret, your name has been in the headlines. It was on the lips of Seth Rollins this past week when he was on Chris Jericho's podcast. And it sounds like he's a little unhappy about some of the comments that you made in the past on Sports Illustrated about the injury that he sustained, or he gave John Cena when he broke his nose. I know that you wanted to comment on what Seth Rollins said. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I think Seth, you know, I'm a really big fan of Seth. So I think he's one of the, you know, really one of the best young wrestlers in the world today. You know, that's why I think I made such a strong criticism. It's meant to make him think. You know, it's not a personal attack. It's a professional criticism of his work a few months ago. And all you have to do, I think there's a little bit of an onus here not to own up to what he did. You know, you can watch it back. I mean, I watched it back just a minute ago. I was watching it back. He clearly knees John Cena as hard as he can in the face. It's not John Cena's fault. If you watch it, it's not John Cena leaning in. It's Seth Rollins pulling his head down and kneeing him as hard as he can in the face. It's bullshit. You know, it's everything I said is true. And if he's got hurt feelings, you know, it's better to have hurt feelings than a broken, shattered face. And I think, you know, my whole gripe with that kind of stuff is that you can't get injured. Nobody can afford, or the wrestler getting injured can't afford to get hurt. There's a huge onus on the two wrestlers to protect each other at all costs. And if you can't protect the guy you're working with, if you can't be more careful than that, then you need to go back to the drawing board. And it's a good criticism. All those agents in WWE, I don't know who they are that are schooling these guys and telling them what they're doing right and telling them what they're doing wrong, should all be chastised for not speaking up too, including Vince and including Triple H. What he did was totally wrong, totally unprofessional. And it's true. It's not a personal attack. It just means be more careful. You know, you can't be hurting guys like that all the time. Every, you know, he's hurt Sting. I don't know what happened with Sting. I didn't see it. But, you know, you got to be careful with the guys you're working with. You have to be professional all the time. And it's not a thing to get hurt feelings about so much as it is to look at the message. You know, the message is, you know, you have to protect the guy you're working with. And as far as having hurt feelings about, you know, that, you know, I know Jericho made some kind of comparison to Goldberg kicking me. I guess that's the same thing about, you know, wanting to get injured or something. But the truth is Goldberg kicked me in the head because he didn't know what he was doing. Similar to Seth Rollins throwing a knee to somebody's face and not knowing what he's doing. And it's professional wrestling. And anytime you're going in there and you're getting hurt for real, you're doing it wrong. It's totally wrong. You can't hurt somebody. You got somebody's life in your hands, and you can't make those kind of, it's not a small error. It's a huge error. And he's lucky. He's really just lucky that he didn't kill John Cena. And that's the message. And to compare it to, you know, when I talk about being the champion and not, you know, not being able to get hurt, like you can't get hurt. It's not allowed. That's true. He should know that better than anybody. I know he was probably more set back by the injury than anyone. But the fact is, you got to ask yourself, the move you did, whether it was necessary, what was critical to the match, or what you did wrong. But you can't get injured, period, in wrestling. And you can't get injured, especially when you're a champion, because you have an onus and you have so much weight and responsibility to make sure you do not get hurt. I know accidents happen, but don't let them happen. You have to stop them from happening. You have to really think things out. And, you know, if he stops and rewinds that match and he gets to that part where he blew his knee out, I'm sure he could come up with some other move that he could have done better that it would have spared his knee. And that's the kind of shortcut. You got to think about what you can do next time to avoid those things. It's not that I'm saying injuries don't happen. Injuries do happen, and they will happen. But when you're chosen to become the champion of the company, it's a huge, A, it's an honor, and B, is an onus put on you to make sure that you can be there every night and carry the ball. And I never said that they can't get hurt, because it does happen, and it's unfortunate when it happens. But it's not about it's all about protecting yourself and being able to be there long term, especially as champion. And they're all messages to him just to be careful and to change whatever however his work rate is. I mean, and not to be, you know, first of all, when you hurt somebody as badly as he hurt John Cena, and then I think make reference to John Cena being clumsy and that he leaned forward, I think you need to watch the tape back and see that you grabbed him by the head and jerked his head down towards your knee and kneed him as hard as you could in the face because you lost control of your body functions or your movements. And you know what? You just can't make those kind of mistakes. And you shouldn't be mad at me. You should thank me for being so honest. And you should reflect on that and make it a point in your throughout the rest of your career that you're never going to injure anybody like that ever again, period.
Do you think that he is? I mean, do you think that Seth Rollins is a bit reckless? I mean, I know you mentioned Sting as well, and I don't really know that what happened in that match was necessarily Seth Rollins' fault. I mean, you can go back and watch it and decide for yourself, but I mean, do you think that he's a reckless wrestler?
Well, I'm only going to speak about the actual knee in the face, and that was reckless.
Yeah.
You can watch it and see it back, and you know, if I'm wrong, it was John Cena's fault, which is baffling to me, because it doesn't look like it's John Cena's fault at all, even if he forgot and he didn't understand that he was going to get kneed in the face. I don't see anything that John Cena could have done any different to avoid it. I know that he was gracious about it, but the truth is, in wrestling, when you injure somebody that badly, you know, that makes you unprofessional in a business where it's all life and death, but depend on your safety and your ability to do the job. And you know, wrestlers, nobody sets out to hurt one another. And I know things happen out there, but you have to think things through all the time and always look down. When you're looking down on somebody, understand that you got his wife, his kids, his whole life is in your hands, and you just can't drop the ball. There's no room for anybody dropping the ball, any wrestler.
Yeah.
Period.
And a lot of wrestlers are getting injured right now. I feel like every week I'm reading about somebody else that's going down with an injury. You know, one of the big debates recently, I mean, you've had voices on both sides. I mean, you've had guys like Jim Cornette and Vader on one side talking about how the product's moving too fast. You've had guys on the other side like Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks defending this new faster-paced style. I mean, do you think that the new style of wrestling lends itself to more injuries happening?
I think for sure that they're going a lot harder, a lot faster, a lot more. There's a lot more stuff, a lot more ups and downs and contact in the matches that you can see that all the wrestlers are, they go into the next spot almost right away, into the next spot right away, into the next spot right away. It's almost like a routine of cars going really fast. And you know that there's going to be a crash up, sooner or later. But, you know, I want to say now that I'm a huge fan of Seth Rollins, and it's not a critical judgment of him as a human being. It's a question about his safety in the ring. And, you go back to the knee again and, whether I think he's reckless. I don't know for sure if he's reckless. I've watched him a lot of times. I think he's a great talent and a really hard worker, and he's a great athlete. But you know what? It's about your safety record in the end, and you got to be more safe in the ring, and that's the bottom line. It's not a personal attack; it's just a professional criticism. That's maybe important for him to go back and watch that tape and go, you know what, I screwed up big time, and I should learn from that. And I lost the belt at a critical time when the company needed me, and I was getting a big push and big break from my career. And I'm not sure, like I said, the accidents do happen, but you got to just question, sometimes you can't avoid it, especially if another wrestler did it to you. But in the case of Seth Rollins, it looks like he did it to himself. And then you got to ask yourself, okay, what I could have done differently, or maybe I shouldn't have done that move. I should have done something else. I mean, I worked with, I worked with Jerry Lawler, I worked with Bob Backlund, guys that were a little older than me when I was, kind of like him, where I was, full of piss and vinegar and could go 100 miles an hour and could do all kinds of stuff. But, I toned my work down and wrestled their styles, with a thumb to the throat and selling. And Bob Backlund kind of, I put on my old school boots and went back to the way I wrestled years before to accommodate Bob and to accommodate Jerry Lawler and accommodate different guys to their work style so that they could, I could bring the best out of them. And what happened with Sting is more, I didn't see it, so it's more of an observation, but if he hurt Sting by throwing him into the turnbuckle and he hurt himself really bad, I mean, you have to question, why are you throwing a 58-year-old guy into the turnbuckle like that when you know he's 58 years old? He'd always come back and he's doing a hard time. He's come back after, being his age, but they're trying to squeeze some mileage out of him at the end of his career, and it's a big chance for him. And, you got to look at all that and go, hey, I hurt this guy too. Could I have done something differently? Yeah, probably you could have done something differently, and you should bear a little more thought into some of the ages of the guys you're working with. When you're champion, it's your responsibility, A, to never hurt anybody, including yourself. And when you're champion, it's your job to bring the best out of your opponent all the time and to work their style and to bring the best out of both of them. That's the reason you are the champion.
Well, I know we only have a couple minutes here before we welcome our guest on for this week, Jake the Snake Roberts. But, Brett, I also wanted to get your opinion or your take on, and Blade, I know you're a big MMA fan as well, the return of Brock Lesnar to the UFC. I mean, really catching everyone off guard. This guy's going to be at UFC 200, taking on Mark Hunt. It doesn't sound like, based on what he said to ESPN, he was entirely happy with the choice to re-sign with the WWE. When he did a couple months ago. I mean, do you think that he's having buyer's remorse here, guys? I mean, do you think that Brock really wants to be back in the UFC?
Well, I know like about a month ago that he mysteriously appeared on the UFC roster. So I don't know if I was totally surprised, but I kind of saw him coming back. And from what I've read, I heard he regretted leaving the UFC from the get-go. So I think he's probably happy to be back, and I bet he's still in pretty awesome shape. So
you know, one thing about the WWE, when you cross over from UFC to WWE like he has, which few people have, it does give you a chance to stay in shape, heal up, you know, any injuries or old, you know, broken knuckles or anything like that, any kind of war wounds that you get from that UFC where it's full on. You know, I would never underestimate a guy like Brock Lesnar. He's a phenomenal, you know, athlete. He's a guy with a lot of heart when it comes to fighting, you know, whether it was his amateur wrestling or even his pro wrestling. He's been a fantastic pro wrestler. I think he's one of the best wrestlers of all time. He's an awesome specimen, as my dad would say. He's just he has everything to be a great wrestler. And you know, if he's going to go back to UFC, I have no doubts about him. I believe that he's fully understands the risks involved. You know, I worry about him as somebody that's admires him and likes him. I worry that you know, when you take time off from that UFC and you get into the sort of fun and games of pro wrestling, where it's fun to go out there and work a match and tell a story and all that. But the UFC is it's a tough way to make a living, and I just hope that that it works out for him. And I also hope that CM Punk, who I believe has his upcoming fight in August, that you know, I hope it works really well for both those guys. In a lot of ways, they kind of even though it's certainly not so, but they kind of represent wrestling to me, and the pro wrestlers trying out UFC is. There's a little pressure on them that the other fighters don't have. I think to show them up more and to show them as not as legitimate, say, as someone that's just done all that UFC all their lives and stuff. Whereas I commend both Punk and Lesnar to it takes a lot of courage to do the UFC. Any UFC fighter, I think that the courage to go out there and put your life on the line and fight somebody like the old Coliseum days where you fight to the death kind of thing. It's almost like that in UFC. And I got a lot of respect for him, but I just hope that it's a mistake that he's happy with down the road. Pro wrestling is always, for someone like Brock Lesnar, I think pro wrestling can be fun. You know, it can be a lot of fun, and it's fun getting it going out there, and you get a bit of adrenaline rush. You can stay in shape. You can... you know, be a character on the show, and there's a whole different sort of element to it on top of what they do in the UFC. And you know, let's don't forget that I think Brock Lesnar has the all-time highest grossing gate of any UFC fight ever, you know, as far as TV buys and that kind of stuff. He's definitely a standout UFC guy that's special in his category he's in.
He's big business, that's for sure. He said it many times in his interview. Well, with that, guys, we are going to jump into our interview here. Actually, wait, before we do, I know we've got him here. He's an MMA expert. TJ DeSantis, our producer. TJ, I know you're listening in right now. You know the odds here better, I think, in this fight between Brock and Mark Hunt here. Which of these guys is favored going into this fight?
The line opened up yesterday at Brock being a 2-1 favorite. That has switched dramatically. Now Brock is a 150 underdog, plus 150. So if you bet $100 on Brock Lesnar, if he wins, you get 150 back plus your original $100 bet. So I think the betting line has switched to what this fight actually represents. Brock Lesnar, there's a path to victory for Brock, but it's somewhat unlikely. He's going to have to go through hell. Mark Hunt, one of the best strikers in the heavyweight division, hits very hard. He's very dynamic, has good takedown defense, and is very big. If Brock gets him to the floor, he could submit him. He could ground and pound him. But over the course of 15 minutes, every single round starts on the feet. I like Mark Hunt to get it done at UFC 200.
Wow. Look at that, guys. We have a real MMA expert in the house here. I'm talking to Bret Hart, legendary.
That's refreshing.
Yeah, right? That was so good. TJ, you're great at what you do. Well, guys, we are right now. We're going to jump into our first part of our interview. Next week, we're going to be playing the second part of this interview. It is is between Bret and fellow WWE Hall of Famer Jake the Snake Roberts.
Hey, Bret. How you doing, buddy?
Pretty good, man. I'm over here in Montreal.
Oh, nice.
That's a good place to hang your hat. I envy you. That's a great time to be there, too.
Tomorrow night, so it'll be good. Have some more fun. Where are you at right now?
I'm up in Calgary.
Oh, yeah.
And we're enjoying a nice, it's about close to 90 degrees Fahrenheit up here.
Somebody's got to be there. Might as well be you, Brett.
I'm happy to be here. It's one of those times of the year where this is probably heaven on earth up here right now. It's 90 degrees with a cool breeze. It's a beautiful
nice
day up here.
I remember the days that it wasn't, though. I'm living in Vegas now, so 108 degrees is just about right.
Well, Jake, this is Nick Hausman. I've interviewed you before for WrestleZone, and I'm on the line here. Good to talk to you again, Jake. I'm here with Blade Hart, Brett's son as well. Blade, would you like to say hi to...
How's it going, Jake?
Pretty good. You're not going to wind up stretching me too, are you?
No.
Okay, good. I like hearing that.
Well, Jake, obviously, you know, we had DDP on last week on the show, and we'll start off. Let's talk about the movie. I mean, this thing is now on Netflix. It's more readily available than ever before for people to go out and check. And I mean, what an inspirational story. Before we get into all the history but with you and Brett, tell us a little bit about what this movie has meant for you and your life now.
Well, it was real hard for me to really do this project because a few years ago, there were some real jerkwads that had a movie called Beyond the Mat. And they literally carved me up and carved my whole family up. We all know how that goes sometimes. It's bullshit. But for me to decide I wanted to do it was kind of hard, man. You know, get hurt again, get pissed off or whatever, and I sat down with Dallas, and the deal was if I watched the movie and I didn't approve of it, it would never go out. So they kind of told me, okay, I'm not going to hurt too bad in it. It's still very emotional for me to watch. I mean, there's so much in the movie, and it's not fun looking at yourself when you're at your very worst. And there were a few instances that, obviously, I was drunk or whatever, and I tell you, man, when you watch yourself on film make an ass out of yourself and you just look at yourself and try to figure out, how in the hell did I get there? You know, and that's the million-dollar question. How did I get there? Well, it wasn't all in one day, but over a period of time, they finally reached out and bit me in the ass, man, and that's just the way it was, though. So I'm here today, and the movie's doing very, very well. And the great thing about the movie is it's helping people, man. And not only from my perspective, but it's also inspiring other people to help other people, like Dallas did for me and for Scott Hall. I mean, that took a lot of balls, man, to invite Scott Hall and Jake Roberts into your house. You know, that'd be like inviting Neidhart and Jake Roberts into your house. You know, what the hell? You don't want to do that. You know, it's not a good thing.
Things are going to happen.
Dallas was very patient with us. He worked with us, and he stuck by his guns. And lo and behold, 5 years later now, man, I'm, 5 years clean, but I still can't believe it. I still have a hard time believing it. I look at the film, though, and I'm like, how did I let myself get that bad? Well, little by little, man, and once the hook's in, you can't get away. That's what happened to me. So, fair warning to all those out there. Don't do it.
And, I mean, Brett, is this hard? Was it hard for you to watch a movie? Like, I mean, Jake says there were points in that movie where, you know, he wasn't at his best. I mean, is that a hard thing for you to watch, a friend like that go through?
I've known a few guys down the road that had similar issues. But, you know, it's like you said, like we talked about last week, I think Dallas Page is such the perfect guy. You know, he never gives up. He hangs in there. He's a friend to the end. You know, he never gave up on Jake all the way through that, and he's such a great friend to have. You know, he had just the right measure of pressure that he puts on, and he was very honest, and there was never any kind of it was never a performance or anything with Dallas. You know, he was always straight to the point and spoke the truth. And the way he sort of leaned on Jake sometimes to, you know, that we, you know, this is going to be a challenge and this is going to be a long road. And I really found that my heart just got soared with all the good things that came out of Dallas Page. He was such a great friend to come through for Jake and Scott. And anybody that's been around both those guys knows that it's been tough for both of them. They've had a tough road. And, you know, it wasn't easy for anyone to get them on the right track. And I could see, you know, because I hung around with Jimmy Anvil Neidhart for a long time. And, you know, people get accustomed to a certain way of life and a certain kind of, behavior. And it's tough to change that. And one thing about Dallas is that he never gave up. You know, I thought that his commitment was so sincere and the effort that he gave. And I think that's what probably eventually sort of, you know, rang through for Jake, was that Dallas never quit on him. You know, it would have been easy to quit and go back into that same kind of behavior and fall down again. And Dallas, you know, he never let go. He never gave up. And he always would reel you back in and get you back on your feet, get you in the point in the right direction again. And even when you lost your way again, he was right there to turn you around and get you back. And that's the hardest part. And kudos to both of you, for Dallas, for never giving up, and for you for finally finding the courage to beat your demons and to push past all this stuff. You know, I never I don't know if I ever met your kids, but your kids all in that show seem to be such good kids that really wanted you back in their lives. And they, you know, through what I saw of the movie, how they were disappointed when you fell back, and how they still like Dallas, how they stuck it out and hung in there with you. And they made a commitment that they wanted their dad back and they wanted you as part of their lives. And I think it's a really powerful message that, you know, guys that are in your shoes, you got to find the courage to start all over again and get back on your feet. And you got to find the courage to see it through to the end. And, you know, it's a powerful story. And I think it's a message that should be heeded to wrestlers all over the industry and people in general that have similar issues with their husband or their spouse or with one of their kids, that you got to dig deep and you got to get them help and you got to turn your life around if it's the last thing you do.
Yeah, I can't thank my kids enough, man, for, you know, giving me a million chances, you know, and to go into the Hall of Fame, you know, is such a big moment for me. Brett well knows how it moves you inside. And it's like you take a deep breath. It's like I finally made it. Well, that's kind of the same way I'm feeling now about my sobriety and stuff, man. It's like I've actually made it. I mean, I don't dwell on the bad thoughts, but I do recognize them, and I do embrace them, because I've got to be honest with myself and know that, hey, it's still there, man. It's not gone away, but you do have a handle on it. So I'm just going to hold on to that handle and try to do all I can. And I do know that by going out and sharing my story, that makes me stronger. And right now I'm up in Montreal, and we've got a meeting later on this week where we're sitting down with some people over to schools in Ontario, and they're wanting to show the movie in the schools. And, of course, you know, you guys well know there's a lot of language problems there, you know, a lot of F-bombs. And the gentleman that we've talked to initially, he's like, I don't even care about the F-bombs. He said, the message is so strong and these kids need it so badly, we're willing to look past that. I'm like, well, why don't we just do this? Why don't we, let me see if I can't take it back to Dallas and knock that stuff off of there, you know, so we can watch the thing and keep going. But I'm very excited because, you know, if I can help one person not do what I did, man, you know, how sweet. I mean, it would break my heart if my kids, you know, went the way that I did. But, you know, thank God they haven't. a lot wiser than I was.
I really think, Jake, that your movie and the truth of it rings out really strong, and that I personally wouldn't worry too much about the F-bombs either. I think there's a really powerful message in there that comes out. And, you know, there's all kinds of people out there that got similar issues with their own father or their own mother their brother or sister, and they're going to relate to that. And there's an honesty that comes out, and the message is really strong. It's really powerful. And I think that, you know, most kids have heard the F-bomb enough times that they're not going to be too bad an eye at that. I think they're going to look at what the message is, and you got a really powerful message there. And Dallas Page really comes across as a guy that's very sincere and has your best interests at heart. And I think there's a message in that. And you're right. I think it's worth kids of all ages. You know, I think anything above 12 would find that movie very fascinating and very would give them a sense of you know, what to be aware of down the road for themselves and how to remedy things within their own household.
Yeah, that's true too, man. Just, you know, that's the thing. I just want to reach out there, man, and try to make myself available. I make myself available at these this tour that I'm on. Whenever here I am going into a bar and giving off a comedy of voice performance or storytelling performance, and you're sitting in a bar and they're drinking, and I'm like talking to them about alcoholism. It's pretty funny, actually. I get a kick out of doing it sometimes because I'll always see one or two guys that kind of reach over and just push their beer back. Like, you know what? Maybe it is time. And when you see a moment like that, man, it kind of gives you the pat on the back that you might need or you might desire. And it is tough sometimes talking about it when you don't feel like it, you know. But if somebody else is hurting, man, I can't push them away. I'm going to be there for them. And, we've had some really nice experiences.
What I really liked was that what came across to me too in the movie was how much it meant to you to go into the Hall of Fame, to have that chance to to sort of get that credit that you deserve for all these years. And you know, I'm glad to have you on the show to say, you know, like the Hall of Fame, you know, it's such a special Hall of Fame that the people that get in there. And it wouldn't have been a good Hall of Fame if you weren't in there. You've always been one of the all-time great wrestlers. You were always a great wrestler, always professional in the ring. You drew money everywhere you went. You always had a great mix of all the sort of skills that you need to be a wrestler. You were a good worker. You were a good talker. You were a good, you always had a good look. The gimmick with the snake was always, there was only one Jake the Snake. And, you know, you really carved out a great history. And to not recognize that history or to not give you that and to see how important that was to you, you know, it struck a really strong emotional chord in me. And I really I'm glad that was given to you and that you had that moment. And it was a powerful part of the film to see you and your kids and your loved ones sort of enjoy that moment. And it's just so true. You know, you had so many great matches and so many, you know, such a great career. I mean, it's like, I know, you know, when I was in tag team days in the Hart Foundation and stuff like that, you were working with everyone from Macho Man to Andre and Steamboat. And you know, one of the questions I wanted to ask you was, you know, not just WWE, but where would you say, like when did you have your best, like when were you in your prime? Like when you had your best matches and the guys that you remember?
I think my best matches, Brett, were probably a Mid-South, you know, working for Bill Watts as much as I hated it.
Would that be a Junkyard Dog?
Yeah. JYD was there, and I was there, and I'd go in and out of there occasionally. And but there was something about, you know, working for Bill Watts, he was such a smart guy when he came to business, but a horribly mean man when it came to, you know, being a human being. But you always gave, you know, your 100% and everything you could, because Bill Watts tried to keep everybody job scared, basically. You know, and everybody was always trying to make sure they had a spot you work that much harder. But for me to be able to wrestle, you know, with Lynn Denton, you know him, don't you?
Yeah, I remember Lynn. Yeah, I know him well.
But working with Lynn Denton, he was such a great hand in the ring. And, you know, he's another one of those guys that never got the opportunity that maybe you or I did. And, you know, there was a spot wasted without him, because that guy could really go out there, and he knew how to get somebody over. He knew how to get over himself. And that's so hard to do if you don't know how to do it. But, yeah, I would think there was my best area to be in, you know, other than to, when you go events, you run into everybody, but you know yourself, you don't really get a chance to work with anybody. You know, when I was with your father and you guys in Stampede, we had the opportunity to work. We had the opportunity to learn, because your dad did lean on us heavily to get the job done, and we've been put in those positions, which I can never thank him enough, and he was always good to me. And, you know, I'm one of the very few that ever got out of there without getting a little guzzling done or a little prodding done, but your dad was such a sweetheart. He let me slide out the door every now and then. So, and I am so grateful for that.
For advertising and business inquiries, please email info@sharpshooterfunding.com.
Thank you very much for tuning in, everybody, to another episode of the Sharpshooter Podcast here every Tuesday on Bret Hart Radio. And be sure to tune back in this Friday for a brand new episode of Hart Family Vault. This week on Hart Family Vault, Bret goes into the Hart family archives and remembers his fondest memories of Muhammad Ali and his father, Stu. Also, you're going to get the second half of Jake the Snake Roberts' interview with Bret, the 4 out of 10, and the Ask the Hitman segment. All that and more, guys. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes to Bret Hart Radio.
Bret Hart Radio is a TJ DeSantis production. In association with Nick Houseman and Sharpshooter Funding, Bret Hart Radio. Its content is intended for private use only.